RK101 continuation, and this is 36, ought to be added somewhere. When I spoke about our higher consciousness or Krishna consciousness, all that, I could compare it to this understanding that we are right now involved in that. We're dreaming, right? But then we go into that dream. That's the dreaming work, so to speak. But then behind the dreams that, you know, the level from where they're constructed, that's what Freud called the dream work, the unconscious or subliminal, as others, maybe me, would like to prefer, or supraliminal, beyond this. It's hard to tell, but it's beyond. This could be actually in cosmology, I'm not sure, I'm just talking here. So it means that here we are now, and we are dreaming, and we are caught in that, inside that dream, right? We can't just poof, as it seems at least, slip out of it unless we are kicked out of it, which we will eventually become. But then we can look at it from a higher point of view, and that's the idea with the three worlds, part of that, that we are right now situated in. This Bhūloka, where the physical world is, and the Bhūvaloka, the mind, and all that's going on there. But then we are beyond. And because the next level there is that where intelligence is, and the higher, wiser point of view, you could say. And that's how the three worlds are basically described, in one of those ways, at least, in the, for instance, the Puranas. But it is also described that we are in those three worlds right now, which means we can wisen up. And that's why what this process of yoga is about, including all these different stages there, meditation and so on, and then what we're talking about here, bhakti yoga, which is then described as the highest, but also the simplest form of yoga. It's very, it's like a mystery, I would say, in the Vedic tradition that many people now have found. And I think that pretty much started happening in the end of the 60s, and people such as Bhaktivedanta Swami came over, Srila Prabhupada, to the West, and yeah, we can talk about that. But anyway, and he said, all you need is Krishna consciousness. And what does he mean when he say that? When he says that, exactly what we are talking about, that we should just, well, as many talk about, raise our consciousness, elevate, enlighten ourselves. And as we do, and we see that it's a big movement, you could say, all over the world, where people wake up like that and they become vegetarian, live more sattvic, and so on and so forth, and learn and try to learn, which is, seems to be the most difficult thing to learn today in this age, to just be friends and cooperate, teamwork, without fighting. after a while. So it's interesting because it is said that we live in this age of Kali Yuga, which is sometimes translated to the age of quarrel. So keep that in mind. So yeah, as we spoke about last time, it's about waking up from the dream. That's what we are talking about here. It's a very nice metaphor way of describing what is going on here. And that's also how this cosmology works, that you find, for instance, in the Puranas, that it's a macrocosm. By looking at our own daily lives of wakefulness and dream and deep sleep, subliminal, and so on, and also how we function right now. We have a body with senses, we have the mind, and then behind there is intelligence and the Atma, the conscious observer. So when we have that kind of worldview, so to speak, and we understand that what I write now, because we are not talking some theoretical little idea here, we're painting the cosmos for you, that what you see here and hear and experience with your senses, perceive with your senses, in what we call the physical world. I can stretch out my arm and it goes out there into that space there, which I was taught is reality and the only reality, because I grew up in a Western materialistic cosmology worldview, which I then had to, couldn't do anything else than to question, because it just doesn't hold up, and and also realized how, you could say, challenging it's a bit of a work to break out of a conditioned point of view or worldview like that. We're talking about very deep, fundamental platforms here for that our entire lives rest upon. So these are important matters, and not just some fanciful philosophical speculation corner here. Because if you now just imagine, at least, just what we see out there is a dream coming from somewhere. God's dream, we hear in the Bhagavatam, that we are then co-dreamers in dreaming our own little dreams. We create our own little worlds here, right? With your house and your garden and whatever. Maybe you're in charge of an entire country or of an entire cosmos. So that's what we do here, and that's what's going on out there. It's our dream, but it's such a good dream that we made. It's like a VR game that we can enter into and then experience ourselves being caught into, or maybe even accidentally forgetting, because it's so convincing and realistic, forgetting that this is just not real. And then, whoops, game over, and we are out there again. Wow, what a game, what a dream. It felt so real. So that's the worldview that we are looking at here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and which I have the proof for here, and I can continue making as many episodes you ask me to, or discuss me into. If there is no response here, I suppose that either no one is interested in the topic or everyone agrees with me. Or, well, completely disagree, but don't even bother discussing it. So that's the way it is. But, yeah. So then when you sit here and you... Here is your cosmos. And there's one world out there coming in through those senses and this avatar you call your body, which is sitting in that world. Wow. And it can walk around in that world. But then there's the mental world where I dream at night and where I can imagine anything. I can daydream also. And I try to make my dreams come true, right? To make them appear in that, in this world that I, that seems so real. But both of those are part of the dreaming, you could say. So what we are talking about here, and which I mentioned, by the way, my previous episode was, we can look at this yoga process as a kind of lucid dreaming. That, yep, this is a dream, but now when I'm aware of it being a dream, then, first of all, I'm not so touched by it anymore. And second, I can feel at least somewhat the connection to reality here, behind this dream or outside of it, which also gives, it's quite, how to say, relieving feeling that you're not afraid anymore and you're not so touched by that dream anymore. But you can also then learn, when you have a clearer perspective and you become a bit wiser also by doing this, because we are wise in ourselves, figure out what am I here to do in this earthly realm, in this life, in this body? Why am I here? And we can seek that answer and get that answer much better. And the answer may be that you do what you want to do here. And then this is what I concluded. The best way to live life is according to the instructions and guidance from the wisest ones who have lived here on this planet. And how to eat, how to sleep, how to... Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, about eating not too much, not too little, sleeping not too much, not too little. Which is very nice, because like this, in India, the Ayurveda and all that, that kind of medical or dietary knowledge, and that of China, for instance, the tea, traditional Chinese medicine, the TMC, and you find that there in the Taoism, the way it's Confucian is balance there, we should live a balanced life. Then you learn that more, it's a wiser way of living, and then you become happy, and all this mess that you may otherwise find yourself in, which is so common now in the West, that people think this is so how reality is, it's a cruel reality. But if you go to India or China and places in Asia, you get a completely different picture. Just look at the young people in America compared to I shouldn't speak country names here, but in the West compared to the certain places in Asia. So enough said. Hare Krishna.